Podcast 37, The Christian Connection with the Treaty of Waitangi. The reading for today, the Gospel reading for today is Luke 2, verses 9 to 14. Today, rather than comment directly on the Gospel passage, I'm going to speak directly about the Treaty of Waitangi. This week we celebrated the signing of the founding document of our nation, the Treaty of Waitangi. Today I would like to explore the Christian connection with the Treaty of Waitangi, because the involvement of Christian people with the treaty was quite considerable and is something that is never mentioned as part of our Waitangi Day stories. It is said that Waitangi is the cradle of the nation, the place where our founding treaty established the sovereignty of the Crown in New Zealand and guaranteed protection of land and chieftainship for Māori. It is the place where two peoples become one nation. However, if Waitangi was the political birthplace of our nation, its spiritual cradle was Christianity. In 2014, just 6 years ago, we celebrated the bicentenary of the coming of the Gospel to New Zealand. It's more than 200 years ago on Christmas Day 1814, when the Reverend Samuel Marsden came ashore at Rangihaua, across the bay from Waitangi, and preached the first Christian message in these islands. He spoke from the Gospel of Luke, proclaiming glad tidings of great joy, Te Hari Nui. This is the Gospel reading we read today and why it has been included in today's service. The Gospel message went on to have a major influence among Māori over the coming decades. It also played a critical role in the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. As we come to celebrate Waitangi Day, it is appropriate we reflect on how foundational Christianity was to the treaty. Without the influence of Christianity, it is unlikely our nation's founding document would have ever been negotiated. The influence of Christianity in the story of our nation's birth was threefold. Firstly, there was an ethical and spiritual impulse behind the treaty proposal. Up till now, the British had a poor track record of colonising and showed little regard for Indigenous peoples. However, the influence of two key men in the Colonial Office in the 1830s saw the New Zealand nation follow a different path in this regard. Lord Ginnelg, Secretary for the Colonies, and Sir James Stephen, Permanent Undersecretary, were both evangelical Christians. Their fathers had been MPs in Wilberforce's group that had ended the slave trade. Both also had connections to the Anglican Church Missionary Society, or CMS, which had sent Reverend Marsden and other missionaries to New Zealand. Lord Glenelg and Sir James were committed to seeing Māori interests protected in the colonisation of New Zealand. In fact, they initially opposed colonisation at all and wanted to see an independent Māori nation established instead. However, they eventually realised colonisation was a tide they could not hold back. Instead, they opted to try to establish British law as a restraint on land grabbing. Their influence resulted in Lieutenant Governor Captain William Hobson being dispatched with instructions to seek Crown sovereignty on the basis of the free and intelligent consent of Māori and to ensure their land and political rights were protected. James Stephen drafted the instructions which were given to William Hobson when he was sent to New Zealand in 1840. These instructions included the following: all dealings with the Aborigines for their lands must be conducted on the same principles of sincerity, justice, and good faith as must govern your transactions with them for the recognition of Her Majesty's sovereignty in the islands. Nor is this all. They must not be permitted to enter into any contracts in which they might be ignorant and unintentional authors of injuries to themselves. You will not, for example, purchase from them any territory, the retention of which by them would be essential or highly conducive to their own comfort, safety, or subsistence. The acquisition of land by the Crown for the future settlement of British subjects must be confined to such districts as the natives can alienate without distress or serious inconvenience to themselves. To secure the observance of this rule will be one of the first duties of their official protector. And you may recognise the connection of these instructions with several of the articles drafted in the treaty. Māori saw and still see the treaty in spiritual and Christian terms, as well as legal and diplomatic terms. The te reo name for the treaty is Te Kawenata o Waitangi, the Covenant of Waitangi. And as we know, covenant is a spiritual term that comes from the Bible. When Captain Hobson arrived in New Zealand in January 1840, his momentous task was facilitated by the presence of both Anglican and Wesleyan missionaries. These pioneers of the Christian faith in New Zealand had already been working among Māori for 25 years or more, and they provided the second critical factor for the execution of the treaty. CMS mission leader Reverend Henry Williams was a key player in the drafting of the treaty. Reverend Williams was an ex-Royal Navy officer who had experienced the heat of battle. However, in New Zealand, he had built a strong reputation as a peacemaker, often interposing himself directly into tribal conflicts with nothing but his Bible and the huge mana he had earned among Māori. Shortly before Captain Hobson arrived, Reverend Williams had returned to the Bay of Islands from Otaki in the Lower North Island. He'd walked through bush, swamps and rivers, been paddled across Lake Taupo, and finally sailed from Tauranga to Paihia. Despite his six-week journey, as soon as he arrived, he immediately set to work assisting Captain Hobson. With his son, he translated the English draft of the treaty into Māori. He then played a leading role in explaining the treaty to the gathered chiefs and as an interpreter of the proceedings. Without Reverend Williams' efforts and the support of his missionary colleagues, Captain Hobson would have struggled to get past first base in presenting the treaty to the Māori present. Now, the third influence Christianity had on the events at Waitangi came via Māori themselves. It is one thing for a treaty to be offered, but it also has to be agreed to. While there was vigorous debate among the chiefs, some were for, some were against, their eventual agreement was built on the foundations of faith established among Māori over the previous 25 years. While the spread of Christianity had initially been slow, by the 1830s, the gospel was surging across New Zealand. Regular Māori attendance at Anglican services was recorded at more than 30,000, and the Wesleyan Church also experienced major growth. As Michael King notes in his Penguin History of New Zealand, Te Atua, the God of the Bible, was on the move. When Captain Hobson arrived, Māori were positively predisposed to the offer he carried. They had already seen some of the benefits of Christianity, peace between the tribes, liberty for slaves, and stability that fostered prosperity and trade. British law and government represented to them a further advance of Christian society. And they also had a preference for British rule rather than French rule. As Claudia Orange notes, many chiefs also understood the treaty in terms of a biblical covenant. These factors, plus the implicit trust they had in the missionaries, who were advocating the treaty, were key in securing their signatures. What happened in the years that followed is, however, another story. despite efforts by Reverend Williams and other missionaries like Octavius Hadfield and Thomas Grace. Settler pressure for land prevailed. The treaty was dishonoured, and injustice and outright war followed. Things are now being put right, and the focus is turning to our future as a nation. However, the seeds of the future are often to be found in the past. This Waitangi Day, let us remember the spiritual roots of our nationhood. Te Hari Nui, the gospel, the joyful tidings of good news, enveloped and surrounded the treaty. So what does this mean for us as Christians today? I think there are several things we can learn from this event. Firstly, those early missionaries were not afraid of getting involved in the political arena, where they saw that they could provide a beneficial influence for the future of the indigenous people. Secondly, it reminds us that Christianity is woven into the fabric of this country. From its very beginning, Christians were a powerful influence in the founding and development of New Zealand. The Maori word for the Anglican Church is mihinari. This word translates into English as missionary. Anglicans have this tradition in New Zealand of being a missionary church. And through the Church Missionary Society, missionaries who came to New Zealand in the early 1900s helped shape the country. We need to rediscover our missionary heritage. And then we need to remember that a secular society can't ignore its roots and just say Christianity is no longer relevant to New Zealand. Christianity is embedded in the bones of New Zealand society and in its founding document. It is part of who we are. Our national anthem can be readily sung, as we have done during this service, as a hymn in a church setting. It fits quite naturally. Finally, in relation to the treaty settlement process, I believe the two peoples of New Zealand who are the most represented in New Zealand have two different burdens in relation to the treaty. For Pākehā or settler people, the burden is justice. Where the treaty covenant has been broken, as far as it is possible, it must be put right. For Māori people, I believe the burden is forgiveness. There must be a giving up of continual and prolonged bitterness over the wrongs of the past, and a recognition that a genuine attempt has been made, particularly over the last decades, to right these wrongs as far as is possible. We must honour the treaty in New Zealand today. We are a nation with a bicultural foundation, and that includes everyone who lives in New Zealand today. We are a multicultural nation. We have a bicultural foundation. But only by returning to our Christian roots and the biblical principles of justice and forgiveness can all peoples of New Zealand move forward as partners in our nation today.